How are we doing? Everybody okay? Well, today we're back after a few weeks' break on our Radical King series, teaching series, looking at the life of Jesus in Matthew's Gospel. We're spending a long time looking at Matthew as a church, and the reason for that is this amazing text tells us all about Jesus and what it means to follow Jesus. It's this goldmine of insight. Today's passage is great. I say that every time, don't I? But it really is, and it's always true. In the passage before this, Jesus walks on water. That's really cool. In the passage afterwards, he heals a young girl. That's amazing. These are exciting stories that people remember. But today's passage doesn't instantly look as exciting, but it's given more space. It has more verses. The author is like, no, you need more time thinking about this. So remember that as we go through. I'm going to break it down a piece at a time. This is from Matthew 15 and verse 1. Then some Pharisees and teachers of the law came to Jesus from Jerusalem and asked, "Why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat." So these Pharisees have come all the way from Jerusalem to the Galilee region. That's where Jesus is. And this immediately tells us these are some of the big guns. They're from the capital. They are probably at the top of religious authority in the whole country. They've traveled to northern Israel, which is several days of walking. Imagine that, several days, to say, "Jesus, your disciples are not hygienic. They aren't washing their hands before dinner. This is a travesty." When I was growing up, my brother never washed his hands before dinner. I don't know if anybody else had a sibling like that. He would never wash his hands, and it did my head in when he was handling the cheese or passing out some bread or whatever it may be. And I found it really annoying. I would not have travelled a few days to tell him off. I might have sent him a text. Didn't have them when I was little. Anyway, what are these Pharisees doing? Why make this big journey? Don't they have more important stuff to do? This was actually about more than hygiene. It was about following the Old Testament laws, at least as they understood them. They think, and this is really, really important, they think that Jesus is straying from the ways of God and he's influencing other people to do the same. So it's very serious. They're coming to exert some authority on Jesus, apparently. They're trying to police him. That's what's going on here. And there's this big discussion that follows. But the key thing to know going into this is Jesus is not interested in arguing with people. He doesn't just want to argue with people. I've got to tell you, in the last 20 years, I've spoken to people with all sorts of beliefs and different ideas, and I find people love arguing, don't they? Some people really love arguing. And I've got to say, whether it's Jews, Muslims, atheists, Christians, people love to argue. And now we've got social media, so you can argue 24/7 and never persuade anybody to change their views on anything. It would seem to me that's what social media is for. And it doesn't work. But Jesus is not trying to win an argument. That's not his thing. For two reasons. Firstly, Jesus is not insecure at all. So he doesn't need people to agree with him. He's not driven by not wanting to lose face. Secondly, though, he has something greater in mind. If you look at every conversation Jesus has in the New Testament, he has a different agenda. He's always looking to spiritually form people. To spiritually form people. What does that mean? He doesn't just want to give people more information or advice, top tips. His agenda is to move people towards God, not just in their behavior, but in their inner life. It's formation, not information. Formation, not information. That helps us understand what's going on in this passage. It continues, Jesus replied, "And why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God says, honour your father and mother, and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death." It's pretty strong, isn't it? "But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God, they're not to honour their father or mother with it. Thus you nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition." In classic Jesus style, he doesn't really answer the question, but he gets to the heart of the issue. When the Pharisees complained about the hand washing, remember their wording. They said, "Your disciples break the tradition of the elders." That was telling. You see, what happened is over centuries, they'd taken the Old Testament and they added stuff to it. They developed a million and one extra rules and regulations and laws and lists. And now they'd lifted this stuff up to be equal with, or even above, really, the Old Testament. And so all these things they were demanding everybody does were really about their own tradition. They weren't from the Bible. And so when they come to see Jesus, they're not upset really because he's opposing God. They're upset because he's ignoring their traditions. It's important to see the difference. If you're not super familiar with the Bible, this might be a bit of a shock. It's the most religious people in Jesus' day who have a problem with him. He's outside the orthodox box. He turns it round and says, well, why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? That's the problem. Now, the Pharisees, on one hand, were very into all of their laws. But on the other hand, they were amazingly good at finding loopholes so they didn't have to follow them anyway. They'd make amazing lawyers, or maybe prime ministers. Jesus has an example. They took one of the Ten Commandments, honour your father and mother, which was obviously about respecting your parents. Any parents here? You like that law, don't you? Honour your father and mother. And they'd sort of squirm out of it. They'd say, well, I could use that money to help my older parents. I could do that, but I've set the money aside for spiritual things. It's for God. So I don't need to set it aside for my parents anymore. I'm free from that obligation. Do you see? They were very good at twisting it and squirming out. And Jesus comes down on it like a ton of bricks because it's deceitful and it's damaging. The truth is, and I really want you to hear this if you're new or you're exploring church, the truth is, what God says and religious tradition are not necessarily the same thing. What God says and religious tradition are not necessarily the same thing. Through history, religious leaders have done and said and decreed all sorts of things that have caused great harm, which is bad in itself, but it's also bad because it puts people off what God is really like, and that's terrible. It makes people get the wrong impression about God and they walk away. If you've been told things about God that are not true, things that have been used to control you or oppress you, I am so sorry that that happened. I don't think that represents what God's really like at all. Anyway, the Pharisees were very, very good at doing that. But Jesus continues, and he's really, really direct. He says, you hypocrites, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you. These people honour me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules. Now, many centuries earlier, the Old Testament prophet Isaiah had a similar message and things hadn't changed. The problem was people were sort of saying the right things, they were sort of doing the right things, but their hearts weren't in the right place. This is very hard for some of us to hear. You can be spouting good words, you can be openly worshipping, you can maybe even have your hands in the air, and yet you can have a heart that is far from God and simply be teaching and living what Jesus calls human rules. But what Jesus says next clarifies something incredible. And get this, he doesn't just want the Pharisees to hear this, he wants everybody to hear. Jesus called the crowd to him, means get everybody around. Hey guys, listen to this. Listen and understand. What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of their mouth, that is what defiles them. What Jesus says here, it's easy to miss how radical this is. The Pharisees had taken some of the sensible food laws of the Old Testament and expanded them over time. And that's why to this day, Jewish people have kosher law. You don't mix meat and milk and so on. Now, we might look at the Pharisees and find them a bit strange, but we have our own versions of this too, don't we? We sort of get into thinking, well, if I'm obeying all the rules, and I'm nice to my next door neighbour, and I give to homeless people, and I recycle my cardboard, what's the problem? Even more than that, I attend church. I'm even serving at church. I give money. I stand up for right and wrong in my community. What's missing? You know, I'm doing all of the stuff. Does God want more than that? Is that not enough? But Jesus says it's not like that at all. You haven't even diagnosed the issue if you're thinking that way. Everybody, by nature, tends to think that our big problems are outside ourselves. It's our environment that's the problem. It's our circumstances. It's what other people have done to us. So when he says it's what comes out of the mouth, not what goes in that defiles, Jesus is turning it around 180 degrees. It's completely counterintuitive to every culture in the world, including the one he lived in and the one that we live in. Completely different. If you're a Pharisee and you're listening when Jesus says this, It's very difficult because you've spent your whole life on the idea, if you can control what goes in, if you can stay physically clean, you're all good. And Jesus says, you haven't even scratched the surface. Then what happens? The disciples came to him and asked, do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this? Maybe they're on social media too. Everybody's offended on social media. We know that Jesus was revolutionary because of this reaction. His own disciples are concerned. Whoa, hold on, Jesus. You've offended people. You might want to rein it in. You've offended people. Just note that Jesus, the most loving person who ever lived, while getting on with serving people and loving people and looking to spiritually form people, offended them. He offended people. Some people, of course, use this as a justification for offending people now. You've got to be careful about that. Well, Jesus offended people, so it's okay if I offend people as well. All right, steady on there. We've got to be much more careful about doing that ourselves. But Jesus is offensive. If people get the impression that Jesus is a sort of cuddly, dressing gown wearing hipster who makes you feel nice every day and helps you fulfill all your life goals, you've missed it. That's not what Jesus is. The real Jesus loves you enough to offend you for your own good. The Pharisees were offended, yes, but why? Because Jesus told them they were wrong. Not just that they were wrong about information, they were wrong about formation. How God changes people, and that's serious, and he wants better for them and for us. He speaks the truth in love, not in love of being right. He speaks the truth in love. And that's why he replied like this. Every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be pulled up by the roots. Leave them. They are blind guides. If the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit. Even stronger. Jesus is saying that the Pharisees and what they teach is not from God. The Pharisees were teaching with great zeal, great seriousness. They had lots of education behind them. Everybody respects them. And Jesus says, yeah, but they're wrong. They're wrong. They've got God wrong. And so he calls them blind guides, not to offend blind people. This is spiritual blindness. But to say, if you were out walking in a group, you would not have the blind person as the guide, would you? There's some potholes and things coming along. In the Old Testament, the nation of Israel was supposed to be a light to all the other nations, to be a guide to God, so to speak. And Jesus is playing on this theme. The Pharisees are not a guide for the blind, they are guides that are blind. That would be the blind leading the blind. So in effect, Jesus is saying to the disciples, actually, you know, you're blind too. You know, it's not just the religious leaders, it's everybody who is spiritually blind. If they're blind and they're leading people who are blind, i.e. you, everybody's blind. That's everybody. Everyone's covered there. Serious, isn't it? What people teach you and tell you about God matters. Of course, if you open your Bible, there are things about God that are hard to understand, aren't there? There's hard stuff in it to get your head round. There are things even in it that are debatable to people who've done decades of research. But there is lots about God that is not debatable. And there are blind guides. There are people who claim to know the way to God and will tell you things about him that are not true. Things like, well, we need to give more money for God to love us more. Or there's a mystical special knowledge about God we need to have. Or if we behave really well, then we'll get good things. Or you're not really a Christian unless you speak in tongues. Or if you pray hard enough, God will make all of your dreams could come true. I could go on, but there is piles of rubbish out there that people say about God and how to live. There are blind guides. And so we need to be incredibly careful about what we allow ourselves to hear and believe about God, because it's serious. It's one of the few things that Jesus really goes to town over. But if you're ever in doubt about where to get the truth about God, Peter really helpfully ends the passage by doing exactly the right thing, goes to Jesus. Peter said, explain the parable to us. Are you still so dull? Jesus asked them. They're Jewish. This is how Jewish people talk. It's not as harsh as it sounds. Don't you see that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and then out of the body? But the things that come out of a person's mouth come from the heart, and these defile them. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These are what defile a person, but eating with unwashed hands does not defile them. So he goes all the way back to the food issue that the Pharisees were stressed about. With food, it comes into the body, goes out again, then it's done. No, it's the stuff that comes from you that's the problem. But look at how it doesn't stop at the mouth. This is important. Of course, with your mouth, you can do lots of bad things. You can gossip, you can lie, you can criticize and so on. But the root problem is not your mouth, is it? It's your heart. In Jewish thinking, the heart was not just the blood pump in your chest. The heart meant the seat of the will, the innermost self, the real you at the end of the trail. So it's worse than we think. The heart is a factory of evil thoughts. Like Jesus said, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These come from inside you. Your heart generates these things. That's where the problem is. If it could be solved with some water and some soap, that would be amazing, wouldn't it? But it can't. And so this gets to the nub of the difference between Jesus and the Pharisees. Very sadly, they represent what I think lots of people in this country grow up thinking Christianity is. You must have encountered this. Behavior modification. Wash your hands, do what you're told, obey every law, be a good person, and then maybe, if you're lucky, on a good day, God will give you a thumbs up. I think that's what lots of people think Christianity is in this country. And it's really sad, because if you see that God, if you see God in this way, if you think God is like that, it will make you miserable and proud, and you will never know if you've done enough, ever. But also, and the great irony is this, it's a very low view of sin. If you take sin as seriously as Jesus does, and you see that it has a hold on your heart the way that Jesus says it does, the idea that you could get out of it by a bit of behavior change is laughable. Totally laughable. It would be like getting billions of pounds into debt and thinking you could get back into credit by going through some bins and looking for discarded pennies. That's what it would be like. The way of the Pharisees is deadly. Jesus, on the other hand, wants to spiritually form people. He's very clear. The issue is not the hands or the mouth, but the heart. And the heart can't be fixed by just changing your behavior or your words. It's deeper than that. How does it happen? How does a person really change? That is a huge question. But just in this passage, I think there's a couple of big hints. The spiritual formation of our hearts means, one, we need formation, not information, so allow God to plant you. It's tempting as you go through life to revel in arguments and try and win the debate and impose your own way on other people, but that's totally ineffective in spiritually forming you or anybody else. In the same way, what Jesus calls human rules don't spiritually form us to be like him either. It's so tempting to believe that simply following instructions will change us. It feels doable, doesn't it? Like one of those weight loss programs. You know, you do the right thing, you lose the weight. But in reality, it's the deep heart stuff that Jesus is interested in. And you can't change that with just a program or strong will. We have the Pharisees as an amazing case study of what happens when people have passion and a bit of knowledge and yet get God wrong. The analogy that Jesus uses is of God planting a seed. He says, a plant the Father has not planted will be pulled up by the roots. But that means a plant he has planted will last. The work of spiritual formation in us, of changing us, is most of all a God thing. You can do stuff that helps. You can do stuff that gets in the way. But be encouraged. This is great news. It's him that does it. Your part and my part is simply to let him. Doesn't mean we ignore hard work. Doesn't mean we stop using our brains and thinking or seeking to grow. That's all good. But the moment we think any of it is down to us, we've missed it. All the good heart change that happens in us is down to God. If you've been a Christian for any length of time, you know this. Glad John Last is agreeing with me. You've been a Christian a very long time. It's true, isn't it? You know it wasn't you after all the years of following Jesus. But sometimes we needed to be reminded of that, and I hope that today is serving that purpose. Let God keep growing you. If you follow Jesus, he planted the seed. Let him keep working in your life. Never be fooled into thinking it's just about the right information or the right rules. That never works. But secondly, We need a guide who can see. So allow Jesus to lead you. Let him be the guide. Jesus called the Pharisees, the top religious experts in the whole country, blind guides. And you can only say something as strong as that if you believe that you yourself can see, can't you? In saying this, Jesus gives his disciples a choice. You either follow the way of the Pharisees, who I'm saying are blind guides, or you follow me, which includes my assessment that everybody else is spiritually blind. So which is it? Israel was supposed to be a light to the world. They didn't achieve it because their top people could not spiritually form anybody beyond the surface. All they had in the end was rules and red tape. For us to be spiritually formed at the heart level, we need Jesus himself to be our guide. Without him, we're lost. When Jesus teaches, it's not just to convey ideas or win arguments. He wants us to fall in love with God and his ways. The philosopher James K.A. Smith, who has a magnificent beard, also writes about this a lot, more importantly. And he says, Jesus is a teacher who doesn't just inform our intellect, but forms our very loves. He isn't content to simply deposit new ideas into your mind. He is after nothing less than your wants, your loves, your longings. The Pharisees can't do that. Nobody else can do that. But Jesus is incredibly ambitious when it comes to changing us. He's incredibly ambitious. And he's literally the only guide who can see. That's why we treat his words like gold. Why go to anybody else but Jesus? They can't see. And so let me ask you a simple question at this moment. Who is your guide right now to life? Who's your guide right now? Obviously, I'm saying the answer's supposed to be Jesus. Yeah, we all agree with that. But who is it for you in practice right now? Is it a friend, a spouse, a well-known teacher of some sort? Or even is it just yourself? When it comes down to it, who do you actually believe is the guide that can see? And how evident is that when you go looking for how to live? As we land this, there's one last thing that we've got to say. It's Jesus that saves us, not how well-formed we are. One underlying belief of the Pharisees was what's called works righteousness. This is the idea that you're made right with God, as we've said, by doing good, following the program. But what's really clear with Jesus is that while he is totally committed to spiritually forming us, he does not expect it to be finished in this lifetime. But God is committed to us. Jesus died for us. The pressure's off. God will change you bit by bit by bit, but not to earn his love. You've got to hold on to that, not to earn his love, but because he loved you first. It's always that way around. And so my spiritual formation and your spiritual formation is a journey with detours and stop-offs and highs and lows, the seed that God planted in us. Jesus is the guide to lead us, but with each of us standing before God with his son's record and not our own. What a privilege that God would lower himself to get alongside us, that he would first save us and secondly form us into who he intended us to be all along. What an incredible thing.